Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small-town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country. There's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Joining me today is a co-owner of Regenerative Life Farms in Findlay, Illinois, Becca Dickens. Becca, welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I'm glad to be on the prairie and glad to be here with you.
Becca, I'm just so excited to have you here. I have a friend of mine on Facebook that I've known for years, and she said, you should have Regenerative Life Farm on your podcast. And I said, I've never heard of them. And she said, well, she does business with you at Lytle Park at their farmer's market. And as soon as I looked and saw about your business and you know, your lifestyle, I was like, why did I not know about this? And Stacy and I, my husband, he said, well, I've seen that sign when we're coming down, you know, going down the highway there in front of where your farm is. So would you give a little insight and a little bit of background about yourself and about how the farm got started?
Sure. I was grew up in Sullivan, Illinois. Most of my adult life, I moved away to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so I lived there for most of my life. I was very much a computer person. I did IT project management for international companies, jet setter, big time businesswoman, had a big series of, you know, midlife catastrophes, and decided to move back to Illinois where I grew up, and also wanted to get out of the corporate life. I went to school. I had a great passion for food as medicine, and actually changing the way that I ate and my lifestyle kind of led to my awakening process, which is still ongoing. But I decided to move back to Illinois and go to school to become a nutritional therapy practitioner. This is a practice that is just basically treating medical problems with food instead of with pharmaceuticals, and learning how to do that. Food actually is medicine, and you actually can cure yourself by changing the way you eat. So anyway, moved back to Illinois, but had no job, you know, not much else going on. No plan, hoping to start a practice in nutritional therapy, but I was no kids. I was newly divorced, living with my parents as a washed up loser, and but talking to everybody I could meet about food. I was just extremely passionate about food. And I had a friend that I met in a yoga class, and she said, you should meet my cousin. She's just one of those people who knows how to connect people. And we went to her cousin's house, met him in his garden, Jared Yantis. He was he worked in construction, a woodworker, but he was an amateur hobby farmer, gardener. And he had the most beautiful garden. And I got out of the car and got introduced to him. He showed me around the garden, and we started talking about food. And it was just one of those moments where my mission in life, I just felt it click into place almost immediately. That was in 2018. Mm-hmm. Just looking in his eyes and talking to him, finally somebody understood what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. He talked a lot about gardening and nutrient density, and I talked about food as medicine. And we talked about conspiracy theories and big ag and big food and big pharma and just everything, talked for hours. And we started, I said, you should do a market. You should be selling this to people. And he said, oh, I just grow it for myself and my friends. And I said, no, we got to start selling. And we started selling to friends and family that summer in 2018. And the next summer we became an official business. Eventually we got into the chicken business. We had at one time 250 chickens. We have now downsized. Wow. But we have over 20 different vegetables that we sell at farmers markets. We have a garden market. That's what we focused on this summer. 5 days a week, we were open here at the farm and had a market here. And we do education to people about food as medicine and teach classes on gardening and teach classes on how to make sourdough bread. And our lifestyle now is 80% of the calories that Jared and I eat come from either the farm or locally. So 80% of our food, if we don't grow it, we don't eat. And it's really important to us to live that way. And that's how we got started.
How interesting. And I'm a mile north of Cook's Mills, so I'm at the southern tip of the Amish community. So, you know, they have fabulous, amazing gardens and for the most part feed the, you know, grow what they eat. Not always, but, you know, they do go out into the and get other things to supplement. But, you know, I'm 72 years old, so having grown up in a time where seeing, you know, when I was a kid, you didn't eat asparagus except for when it was in season in the springtime. You know, when it grew up along the roads and you picked it, that's when you ate it. You didn't go to the store and expect to see it on the shelf. And you can now, anything that we eat any time of the year, we can, but we pay a price for that in many ways between the carbon footprint and the fact that, you know, who knows what pesticides you're ingesting and everything. So is your farm organic, 100% organic?
We're not certified organic. And so we are organic in the sense that we don't put anything that ends with "-icide on the garden. So "-icide means murder. Homicide means man murder. Pesticide means pest murder. Herbicide means plant murder. And so we don't think that those "-icides are selective enough to know to kill just the stuff that we consider weeds and not kill our plants and not kill us. So, yeah, we don't put any chemicals on the farm. We use no amendments. We do many other practices that are considered that you need to consider when doing the organic certification. And much, much more. And actually, the organic certification, I think it started in the 70s when that started being a thing, and organic farming. And it started off like just farming the way people used to farm, just growing food without putting any chemicals or anything on it. But it's really become a very expensive certification to get. It's more about being able to put a label on the food and charge more for the food than anything very meaningful. And so we could jump through a bunch of hoops and have that certification, or we could, you know, grow following our own principles and high standards. But it means we don't till. The soil and the health of the soil is our primary focus. And we don't put anything on the garden that kills anything. So we have natural ways to keep the pests from eating all the zucchinis before we can eat them. So in that sense, 100% regenerative.
So then, please explain that 100% regenerative, since that's really the name of your farm.
Yeah. Regenerative means everything is either regenerating or degenerating. Even our own bodies are healing all the time. If you get a cut in your arm, it grows back. When there is bare soil, completely dead bare soil, one of the first things to come and grow is the dandelion. And a lot of people, when they see a dandelion, they put a herbicide on it to kill it. Get rid of that ugly dandelion. The dandelion is a hero, and it is putting nutrition back in the soil. It's taking the power of the sun, pulling it down, mixing it with the rainwater and the minerals in the soil to start to make the soil healthier. When that dandelion dies, it leaves behind the soil healthier than when the dandelion got there. And maybe next year, something a little bit higher up the food chain than a dandelion can grow there and live. And so regenerating the soil, which is really our core focus, is making the soil better. We want this land to be better when we leave it, instead of degenerating it, which is what modern farming practice does. Every year, the soil gets weaker. Mm-hmm. You have to put more amendments on it. It's really becoming almost like florist foam that you put the little corn stalks to stand up in this foam and just hold them up. The soil is just there to hold them up. And then everything that they need with nutrition, it has to be added from outside. And the soil as it regenerates itself and heals itself if left to its own devices, just like our bodies can heal themselves if left to their own devices. That's what we want to be doing, and regenerating the soil. And then that our motto is regenerating the soil, ourselves, and our community.
Okay.
So we think it all starts with the soil, and then everything else can be regenerated.
Yeah, every spring I have this argument with my friends on Facebook who say, you know, they're out there killing the dandelions. And it's like, why? They're a thing of beauty. They're bright, they're yellow, they're colorful, they're alive. And I love nothing more than getting up in the morning. I get a cell phone photographer, but I get out with my phone, and you know, I love to get, and they're beautiful all the time. They're beautiful when they're yellow, but they're equally beautiful when you got the seed head and they're, you know, they're full of dew, and you can catch that dew in the sunrise or the sunset. I mean, it's just like a million little or 100 little sunsets reflected back in there. It's a simple thing, and it's so beautiful. I'm just always telling people, leave them be, let them live. And, you know, I live in a country. I don't have any chemicals on my yard at all. And I do have, we had a friend on here earlier, Ricky Cummings, a few episodes back, that is a trainer, and he sells organic compost that he makes from his horses. And he has a high degree of a lot of customers that are return customers from having that natural fertilizer.
Uh-huh.
I grew up on a farm west of Mattoon, and the farming practices, I know that my dad, I remember that they would probably put anhydrous and maybe some other, you know, maybe nitrogen and some other chemicals on there. But when my dad quit farming in 1980, so the farming practices that have evolved since then, and all the corporate things that have evolved, and all the unnatural things that we, as you say, put in our bodies that, you know, either through the food or a byproduct of it, is just, it's so sad.
Yeah.
And our ancestors did not have, you know, here we have this total epidemic of diabetes and obesity and all these problems that our ancestors didn't have, because mostly, like the Amish, you don't see too many, you know, they end up getting illnesses, as you know, that's common, that English people do as well. But they're usually out there working, you know, barefoot in the soil, being barefoot and grounding and getting that good energy out of the soil too. So I really admire what you guys do.
Thank you. Our medical system is in terrible shape, and it really has become, medicine as it is practiced currently is really more sick care than health care. It's about treating the symptoms of chronic illness. Almost every problem that people suffer from is based on the way that they eat. About 70% of the food eaten in the United States today is ultra-processed food. And the reason processed food is bad is that processing food removes the nutrients that our bodies need. Mm-hmm. Nutrients are fat, carbohydrates, and protein are the main ones, plus a whole host of vitamins and minerals. And that's, our bodies need that to function. When people in the past, you know, our ancestors got sick, often the things that made them sick was malnutrition. It's because it was a lean year, or there wasn't meat for them to hunt. And when you're malnourished, your body can't fight off illness. And so those people were malnourished, and they would get diseases, or they would die of starvation. That was a long part of human history. In the current system, though, people have more chronic illness and more of these big three, heart disease, diabetes, and cancer, were all relatively rare in even pretty recent history, 500 years ago, the unheard of. And all of these things are a product of our modern way of life, and all can be mitigated by changing the way that we eat. And something about nutrient density, what that really means is that the food has a lot of nutrients in it. Those nutrients are stripped out by processing the food. Processing is great in some ways. It stays on the shelf for a long time. It can travel across long distances. It stays fresh. It can be fast. It can be reheated. But there's also a horrible problem with obesity in our country. And obesity, one of the reasons that people are eating so much is that they are malnourished. We are a country that's are starving in the midst of plenty. So you could eat a great big fast food meal and feel your belly full, and a few hours later feel craving and hungry again. It's not because you're a gluttonous. It's because your body is hungry. You have eaten a whole bunch of bulk that your body needs to process, and you probably got some calories of sugar and carbohydrates from that, but your body is starving from nutrients. It's sending you hunger cues and saying, I'm not nourished. All of your cells need more healthy protein and healthy fats and healthy carbohydrates. And so this is a horrible wheel of hunger and then eating and overeating and gaining weight, but we're actually malnourished as a people. And that makes it that when sickness comes along, it's much harder to fight it off if your body is so malnourished and so depleted.
Mm-hmm. We've been fed the steady diet of how convenient from the time I was a kid, when these places started popping up, with McDonald's and all these places started popping up where, it's a time saver. Busy mom can stop in and feed all the kids. And then you realize after all of that is said and done and the damage starts being done. Now I know that I have a nephew that's in his 40s who was diagnosed with colon cancer. And they say that colon cancer is increasingly happening to people in their, they're recommending now that people in their 40s, have colonoscopies to because it's occurring so early in that generation. And you think about it, if you're just eating a steady diet of nothing but that kind of thing, you're certainly punishing your body. But it's advertisement that's been shoved down our throats that it's okay. It's fun for the family and come in and get a happy meal, and you're not so happy when it all comes back and bites you later on.
Yeah, you mentioned that you are 72, and it made me think that a disproportionate number of our customers are elders. And I think partly it's because young people, working moms, they buy food whenever they can. They run by Walmart on the way home from work, and they're in a hurry. But I also think it's because your generation still remembers garden tomatoes. And that was probably a part of your life. And you know that it's different. And some of these elders who come to the market regularly, who have become friends of mine, are healthier and have fewer chronic illnesses than the young people. I mean, fit, aging, but fit and spry and, loving food and passionate about eating and meals. And so it's just something that I think we're losing. And you're right, convenience it's really important. And it is great that people are able to get to work and commute and drive to other places and eat and be able to still feed their families. But yeah, something is definitely being lost.
It should have started out just to be something that you might go in and do once a month, take the family out and do that. And then, basically at home. But once we had the advent of frozen TV dinners, Swanson TV dinners, and all these things that changed everything, it just snowballed. And it's one thing after another. I worked at Walmart when it came to Mattoon. It was the second super center in the state of Illinois. And I worked in the meat department, and they cut all their own meat. They didn't cut their own meat. They had their meat. We processed the ground it and made ground beef, ground sausage, etc. But when that meat was put out on the case, it had 3 days. After 3 days after that, you had to pull that meat, and it had to be thrown out. So there wasn't any ifs, ands, or buts about it. But there came a time when a store down in Dallas in the meat department voted in a union. And so Walmart said, no, we're not going to have that. So that was when it may seem irrelevant to the conversation, but that's when they decided they didn't want your union organizers coming into the stores. So that's when Salvation Army people and bell ringers and that had to be outside. They can't be inside the vestibule of the store where it's nice and warm. They have to sit out in the cold. And so, but the thing I wanted to get to was that, we had a 3-day date when that meat had to be put out of the case. But then they went to prepackaged meat that came in, and it'll sit on. It's got a two week shelf date, and it's like, what is in that meat? I think I bought some chicken at Walmart. I may have bought a lamb chop when they had it a special time, but I refuse to eat something if it's sitting in the cooler for 2 weeks. How long did it sit in some warehouse before it got on the truck, traveled to Walmart, and then, you know, it's kind of a nauseating thought. You guys also have ground beef and chickens too?
Yes, we have chickens that are our own layers that have been retired. They get processed in Arthur and then brought back home. And so we sell them. They're called stew hens because they're not broilers. They don't work for fried chicken. You need to cook them low and slow in water. And then it makes wonderful chicken and noodles or soup. And we also have five cattle right now. But we get them from Epley Family Farms in Pena, Illinois. And so we work very closely with that farm. And he grows he is an organic grain farmer and also raises, he is organic certified and raises his cows pasture raised. And so we get the cows that live on Regenerative Life Farm from him. And we also buy ground beef from him and then sell the ground beef at the farm. So it's really good, really local, and we can vouch for the way the cows are raised. The only meat that Jared and I eat is either our chickens. Of course, we eat a lot of eggs, chickens, beef from Epley Family Farms, and venison. So it's all local. We all know how it was raised and all know who killed it and how it was treated. So it's of the highest importance to me that the animals are able to live their natural life. The life of a chicken is meant to be scratching in the dirt and eating crickets and, you know, laying eggs and having room to move around. And they like to, all of them have their own personalities and they do different things during the day. And I certainly don't want to eat anything that has ever had to live in a cage. And it's really important that it's local because, like you were saying, I believe that food carries energy. Everything that you eat, it picks up energy as it travels. Just picture an apple. Compare an apple that was picked on our farm, where you can see the person who picked it. You can look in my eyes. You can see my smile. If I look happy, you can look at my trees and see if the trees look tortured and over pruned or if the trees look thriving and healthy. You know that the apple, I can tell you what day it was picked and what chemicals I put on the trees, which is none. Compare that to an apple that was picked maybe in South America somewhere, maybe by a person who was working two jobs and was stressed out. When he pulled the apple off the tree, threw it into a bin, then it travels on a truck, a plane, train, automobile, however it gets here. It goes through several different stages. It picks up energy from all of those places, happy people, tortured people, you know, everyone along that food supply chain also gets to take a couple of cents off of it. Everyone's getting paid all the way down the line compared to the apple that you buy from me. And that apple, when you eat it, I believe you can taste the difference between the apple that's been on a truck and who knows where, and from another country even, and the apple that where you can see my smile and feel my energy, feel the energy of the farm where the trees live. It's going to nourish you differently, especially if it's in Illinois and you live in Illinois and breathing the same air and the trees are sharing the air with us. And so much more so than an apple, when you think about meat that is actually from a sentient mammal. And to think of that, to eating the beef that was either, you know, lives a life of confinement and misery compared to, a happy life of a cow.
So we talked about a little bit about the carbon footprint, which you were really kind of just referencing. There have been many, I would say several different farms that I know that have sprung up around here that have fresh meat like that, that they've grown on their own. And my husband, when he's a notoriously picky eater, and he did not like tomatoes. And I said, try, when we get one from the garden, would you please try the garden tomato? Because I can assure you with every fiber of my being, the tomato that you may have eaten from Walmart or wherever you got your tomato is not a real tomato. It wasn't picked three weeks to a month ahead when it was totally green and ripened by gases in some greenhouse or some warehouse. And he did, and he realized, yes, this is different. And the same is said for chicken. The flavors, besides the nutritional value, but the flavors of a chicken that has been grown in a facility like yours, or and the beef, that is just so different.
Definitely. You know, the Illinois and the whole Corn Belt has some of the richest topsoil in the entire world. There were glaciers that moved through here and deposits, and it's just some of the richest land, and a good long growing season, and just wonderful conditions for growing food. But over 90% of the food that is eaten in Illinois is imported into Illinois, either from other states or other countries. So some of the best ability to grow, but natural resources, and also the resources of farmers, how many farmers live here in central Illinois. A great resource of knowledge and experience. And yet over 90% of the food that Illinoisans eat comes from outside Illinois. So there's something broken there. And we're definitely losing something. And our good resources and our energy is being wasted and not benefiting us. I think it's probably mostly benefiting huge corporations. And maybe some food that's grown in Illinois gets turned into high fructose corn syrup and goes to a processing center in some other part of the world and comes back in the form of Fruit Loops and is eaten in Illinois. But that there's very little connection between the food that is grown here. We grow a lot of corn and soybeans in central Illinois. 30 to 40% of the corn and soybeans that are grown are used for ethanol or biodiesel. And so that's fuel to put in your cars. So the only way that is feeding people is they could fill up their car with ethanol and drive it to the drive-thru and pick up something to eat. But that's not food. That's fuel. The fuel for our cars, not fuel for people. That's what is being done with our wonderful resources here in Illinois.
When you mentioned being turned into Fruit Loops, besides the fact that the lack of nutrition, then there's additional chemicals for the dyes and things that are in there that would not be found in your products. Another benefit.
That's right. And Fruit Loops have been in the news lately, so I'm picking on them. But of course, it's everything. all of the food in that are fed to children in the schools, you know, the food given to people in hospitals trying to get well, the food that everyone is buying, full of literal poisons and grown using methods where the soil and the plants are poisoned. And then all of those, you know, I'll tell you how to tell the difference between a processed and a non-processed food. On a non-processed food, if there is a list of ingredients, if it's something like a tomato, there's no list of ingredients because it's a tomato. But if there's a list of ingredients, here's how you can tell if it's a whole food or a real food. If there are only about five or fewer ingredients, and if they are all words that you know. So if you look at a list of ingredients and there are words on there that you don't know what they mean, that's not food. It's a preservative or a chemical that's there for some other reason, a color to make it have a pretty color or to make it have an interesting texture when you chew it. But that doesn't make it a food.
Thank you for joining me for part one of this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. Please join me next week for part two. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Until next time.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.